Welcome to The Clever Cookster, your ultimate window into the kitchens of the world's best cooks. I'm Kara Rota. Our guest today is Casey Barber, the editor of the online magazine Good Food Stories and the author of Classic Snacks Made from Scratch, 70 homemade versions of your favorite brand name treats. She's also the illustrator of A is for Absinthe, my favorite not children's book, and now the author of the cookbook Pierogi Love, new takes on an old world comfort food. Thank you so much for coming to visit.
Thank you so much for having me.
We're always trying to find ways to help you do things better, and nobody does corporate communications better than our friends at Reagan.com. Their reputation for practical, useful webinars and events is second to none. If you're a corporate communicator, you won't want to miss their upcoming webinar, Create, Market, and Measure Brand Journalism, Lessons from Wells Fargo Stories. It's a 75-minute webinar with the content team at Wells Fargo. Learn how to plan a successful content strategy, the meaningful metrics you must have, and how Wells Fargo builds great content in a regulated industry. Want to sign up? Visit quickanddirtytips.com/offers to get an extra $30 off. That's an offer exclusive to Quick and Dirty Tips listeners. So be sure to check it out at the top of the page on quickanddirtytips.com/offers. So in our respective lines of work, I was thinking about this today. We both spend a lot of time with food people to the point where I kind of forget that not everyone wakes up every morning and the first thing they say is, what are we having for dinner tonight? Like, we're pretty serious food people. So I feel like it kind of strikes me when I meet someone who's a food person among food people and is even more passionate about eating than all of the professional cooks and eaters I interact with every day. And whenever we've crossed paths, Casey, I have this feeling that you seem like one of those next-level food people. Have you ever gotten that before?
I have, and I think as I go out into the world in these years of freelancing and interact with more non-food people, I think it's become sadly clear that I have a level of food obsession that really does sort of go beyond the normal, what my friend likes to call big behavior, where you're eating lunch and you're already thinking about dinner or the snack that you're going to eat next.
Oh, yeah. No, it's really serious. Every conversation over breakfast is, what are we having for dinner tonight? How did that happen for you? How did you become such a food person?
I think it's just something that sort of naturally evolved over the years, as one would maybe, you know, say, perhaps collect Pyrex or collect baseball cards, where one day you just wake up and you realize you have 300 of whatever particular item you decided collecting. One day I just woke up and realized I have this weird backlog obsession with eating and drinking and restaurants and traveling for restaurants. And it gets to the point now where my husband, who is to baseball what I am to food, we map our vacations and we're like, restaurants, check. Donuts, check. Beer, check. Baseball games, check. National parks, check. And like, we do the same thing everywhere we go. And that's kind of how I am with food, is I kind of do the same thing no matter what day it is. But because food is so diverse and so exciting, and there's just always, you're never done learning about it, that it never gets old.
I think that could be your next book with your husband,
the baseball food trip around America.
So talk a little bit about Good Food Stories and how that happened and what the mission is.
Good Food Stories started sort of as a stress relief outlet for me because I wasn't working in food at the time. I was working in public relations, and my friend Danielle O'Terry said, we need to start a blog because you're really depressed and you need something to do. So we started it together, and I took over as she became solely focused on Italian food history and art history, which is another rabbit hole. And it really just became a thing for me to do. And also, when people asked, do you have a recipe for this thing that you make? Where should I go when I'm in New York and eating in the theater district? All the questions that people emailed me anyway, I was like, well, if I put it on the internet, then no one will ask me anymore, and they'll just guess what? They still ask me all the time. My mom-in-law still emails me and texts me, where should I go here? Where should I go there? So that part of it was not successful. But what was successful is it sort of honed my realization that I want to write about food full time. And that started in 2009, and here I am now in 2015.
And most recently about pierogies.
About pierogies.
So let's talk about that. They say that every culture has its dumpling, and pierogies are definitely a proud member of that tradition. I know there's some controversy about, or at least confusion around pierogies, everything from the origin story to the correct plural of the word. I've been saying pierogies, but I was recently corrected at Veselka, actually, while eating pierogies, that it's pierogi or pierogin, but never pierogies. But I notice in the cookbook, you do say pierogies, so.
This is true. The accepted Americanization, the plural, is pierogies. And if you are buying a bag of Mrs. T's, you'll see it says pierogies. And if you're just talking in general conversation, that's what a lot of people say. But it's true. A single pierogi is singular, and a pierogi means multiple pierogies. I can't even say it correctly because I grew up in Pittsburgh. Everyone just says pierogies. It's what they do. So I went with the incorrect,
the Americanized version, basically.
The pronunciation for the masses in the book.
What were some of the most interesting things you learned while researching the book, either about the history of pierogies or their specific culture in America?
I learned that there are pockets of pierogi fanatics all over North America. I really associated it with the Rust Belt area, Pittsburgh, Ohio. I knew there were some up in Michigan, but as I told people what I was working on, I learned that Omaha, Nebraska, for example, is a big pierogi stronghold in the center of the country. I learned that pierogies are really big in Canada, and that one of their traditional fillings, which I'm sad to say, Canadians, it's not in the book, is a prune pierogi.
Unusual.
I did figs instead. I'm a big fig fan, so I deviated a lot from tradition in the book, obviously, but
there are some very unusual pierogies in the book. I love the Reuben ones. I love the vast array of dessert pierogies you have in there. Is that common? I mean, I know that, you know, you can eat them with applesauce. It sort of has this sweet, savory component to it always. But did you come up with the idea for dessert pierogi?
No. The idea of a sweet pierogi is traditional. You'll find a lot of the farmer's cheese pierogies, which you will see both savory in the ricotta style cheese that it is, and then sweetened with a little sugar to make it sort of like a sweet ricotta cheesecake pierogi. And I believe it's Ukrainian, is the sour cherry pierogies are traditional, as well as, I can't remember which culture, forgive me, world culture, I cannot remember who does the apricot pierogi. And I tweaked all of these basic ideas. So there is apricot, there are sour cherries, there's farmer cheese in the book, but then I took it further.
People tend to think that making pierogies from scratch is difficult, maybe because it's one of those things you might have seen your grandma do in one of those magical grandma moves where she moves her hands and it's just done. But in the book, you make it look really easy. What are some of your tips for making pierogies?
I think it is really easy, and it's a nice starter recipe for people who have that dough fear because there's no yeast involved. You don't have to wait for it to rise or look for a warm location. If you can mix together basically pancake batter, you can do this because it's melted butter, egg, and sour cream mixed with flour. That's essentially all it is. Makes a shaggy ball. You let it sit on your counter for 15 minutes and just hang out, and then you roll it out into a big, nice, flat roll and use a cookie cutter. And everyone has cookie cutters, I hope, or a jar. That's the grandma thing, to use a jar or a juice glass to make your rounds.
And I'm sure that when you were testing for this cookbook, you ate pierogies for many a meal, but would you recommend that people eat them as a main course, or is this an appetizer food? Are they instead of hors d'oeuvres you might serve? How are you trying to reintroduce pierogies into people's diets?
I think it is fun to do it as a finger food at a party, basically because my favorite things in life are appetizers and finger foods. So I recommended that to a lot of my tasters, to just have people over and have them sample if they needed to get rid of their excess pierogies in the house. And I think it's fun to put out a little buffet of different pierogi flavors and a bunch of toothpicks and let people go to town.
So what do you eat when you're not eating pierogies? And are you never going to eat them again after doing this book?
I had to take a few months break from eating pierogies once the final shot was taken. I went on a pierogi moratorium, but I'm back again.
Pierogi cleanse.
It needed to happen. It got to the point where I really could not look at another little dumpling in my life. But when I'm not eating pierogies, I'm usually eating cheese, a lot of cheese in various shapes and forms. And since it's summertime, I'm eating all vegetables all the time. I go on the no-cook diet in the summertime because we don't have central air. So it's lots of just tomatoes and balsamic vinegar in a bowl for dinner.
I can definitely relate to that. Thank you so much for coming to visit today.
It was my pleasure.
For some really excellent pierogi recipes, check out Casey's book, Pierogi Love. And for the Reuben pierogi recipe we talked about, you can go to quickanddirtytips.com/clevercookster. And join us next time on the podcast for more tips and tricks from the kitchens of the world's best cooks.